Hello, this is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we are joined by Mark Arnold,
Hi.
Author of a new novel, Monster, the Story of Young Mary Shelley. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks.
The story of Mary Shelley, the author of the Frankenstein novel and what the endured from that and her scholarship and her passion, has endured for a couple of hundred years, and we're going to talk about how and why we think that has occurred and what lessons we can draw even from today. But first of all, Mark, I'd like to get a little bit of your background and how you came to write this novel. You were a professor of communication, assistant professor at Cal Poly.
I was.
And your field was?
Journalism at Poly. Feature writing is what I enjoyed the best.
Mm-hmm. Now, feature writing would be like in journalism, then
journalism,
newspapers, magazines.
Yep.
Huh. Do you think that's an art or a craft that we still need today, given the internet?
Oh, sure. What you're doing is you're humanizing today's events, and you're focusing on a person rather than things or actions.
Interesting. Yeah, I love to read, and I certainly believe as a former librarian that a lot of times the good stuff requires contemplation, reflection, meaning you need to go back to the text or the source repeatedly to sort of look at it in question, and things that are instantaneous or here and gone, evanescent, not as useful for that exercise. So you are a assistant professor of communication and journalism. Lo and behold, you write a novel about a not-so-obscure young woman author in the early 1800s. How did that happen? What were the puzzle pieces that fell into place that brought us to today in this novel?
Well, I was working on a science fiction novel when I asked myself, where does science fiction come from? And being an excellent scholar, I immediately went to Wikipedia and started checking it out. I found that there were two routes to science fiction, and one was fantasy, and the other was true science fiction, the use of technology or science in creating an essential element within a novel. In doing this, I stumbled on Mary Shelley. People kept saying again and again and again, I would find the origins of science fiction were Frankenstein. That's where it came from. So I said, how old was this kid? Found out she was a teenager when she was writing it. And then I found the quote that just captured me, and I was gone from then. She herself said, people often ask me how I, then a young girl, could think of and dilate upon so hideous a subject. And I was gone at that point. At that point, it was take the work that I was working on, put it in a file, save, leave it off the desktop, and start with a new sheet.
Trying to remember where this epigram came from, but therein lies a tale. What led you to write a novel-like treatment of history versus straight nonfiction history?
Yeah, there's that emphasis on feature writing. Through journalism in the 1980s, we started seeing the birth of a new form of journalism called, well, today it's called creative nonfiction, but back then it was called new journalism, for lack of a better word. Thomas Wolfe, Truman Capote, Hunter S. Thompson. And I fell in love with new journalism from Hunter S. Thompson, as many people my age did.
I have to say, Gonzo.
Gonzo. But it was his treatment of the Hell's Angels, the absolute terror that he felt while he was living with them, doing the work, absolutely fascinated me. And that was the key to Hunter S. Thompson. The books became so much about the event, but it was also the author's reaction to that event.
I think, if my history is correct, that they gave him a beating over some trivial thing, and not just living with danger and threat, but actually being threatened and hurt.
And watching other people be subjected to this, too. But it was my introduction to a new form of storytelling. At that time, I was taking a science, or I had finished a science degree a number of years before, and we were having a refueling of one of the largest nuclear reactors in the country. I talked my way inside the containment building during the refueling and did a new journalism treatment of what it would be like to be inside the containment building, this huge dome, darkened dome, where you could look down and see the blue glow of the rods as they were coming out.
Wow. For me, I think that would be like looking into hell.
Yeah, but the neat thing about it was that it earned me a ride to Washington, D.C. as one of the top 10 student journalists in the country at the time.
Congratulations.
Thanks. So now I'm looking for ways that I can apply this new form of journalism to other things. And honestly, the book that I wrote had that in mind. Now, it is not creative journalism. It is not creative nonfiction.
Quotes.
Going ahead and making up quotes for these people. I feel that these are not facetious quotes. I feel that they're not fictitious quotes. They are as close as I can create to what the characters, as I understood them to be, might have said in that situation. So here's a book that I feel is, at least 90% factual plus quoted material.
Give us a brief glimpse at the environment or the milieu in which Mary Shelley was writing. What was the sort of the years in which the novel was leading up to it and was created? What was going on in the world, especially in the world of art? I think it was the beginning of the Romanticist era.
That was a little bit later.
Yeah, so could we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I have always said that you can't understand Mary Shelley without understanding her parents. Her mother was Mary Wollstonecraft, probably the name when it comes to the first feminist writer. There's a scene in here where Mary Wollstonecraft is talking with Thomas Paine. And Mary Wollstonecraft admires his Rights of Man, and she writes The Rights of Women. She was such an independent person and so intelligent that during the terror in the French Revolution, she goes to France from England on her own and gets to Paris so that she can determine for herself the application of liberty, égalité, fraternité as applied to women. That's her mom.
Wow.
And her father is, well, all right, let's play. If I said Dr. Sheldon Cooper, would you know who I was speaking of?
No.
No. That went too in a hurry. He's a character on a very popular program today called The Big Bang Theory. He is completely devoid of much human emotion, instead favoring, for crying out loud, he's a nerd. He's a nerd's nerd. He's just beyond this. Her father is called the Great Anarchist. Now, this is a time right after the American Revolution and during the French Revolution that he's writing about the necessity of getting rid of the monarchy while he's living in London, a few blocks away from the palace, and he gets away with it. Mm. Yeah, that's the type of guy, that's the type of parents she had.
I wonder if he was on some secret police list or something.
I'm
as,
sure
a, as
he
a
was.
Potential.
No more than somebody like Abby Hoppe, I know,
right,
Ben.
Right, perhaps. Now, the social era we talked a little bit earlier is also probably significant. We're calling it the Regency, which is before Queen Victoria came along. Is that accurate?
Yeah. What happened is that George III was nuts, and everybody knew it. So we had to have someone else come in and hold down the throne until the next king was of age and could take things over. But that's not important. What's important is the idea that it's the end of a social era. This is the Enlightenment. This is not the Victorian period. This is the Enlightenment. And the only analogy that I could come up with as I was writing the book was to say, this is just like Haight-Ashbury back in 64. It's a time of freedom of thought. It's a time of freedom of expression. It's a time of experimentation with social forms. And Mary's parents are at the forefront of this. In her house, we have regular parties called salons where the intellectual and the Illuminati of the time are meeting and discussing these types of issues.
Right, drinking and sharing jokes and wisdom. And that was an entertainment in and of itself, just being there with like a fly on the wall and listening to the conversation, I'm
absolutely.
Sure.
Whereas back in the 60s, we talked about, sex, love, and rock and roll. At this time, we'd be talking about sex, love, and poetry.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, the rock and roll was yet to come. So did Mary Shelley have siblings that she grew up with?
Yeah. She had a sister named Fanny, who was from the union of Mary's mother, Mary Wollstonecraft, and an American adventurer. While she was in Paris, she fell in love with this guy, and he was terrible to her. He abandoned her and the child later on.
Fanny.
Yeah. Mm. And her mother dragged this little girl all around war-torn Europe, a woman on her own traveling on the roads of Europe with this child.
Strange.
You can imagine what types of indignities she must have been subjected to. But when her mother came to England and re-met Mary's father, they had the child, Mary Shelley. Her mother, Mary Wollstonecraft, died within 2 weeks of childbirth, septicemia.
Yes, yes.
And so here she is with this utterly humanly incompetent father who simply can't raise two little girls now by himself. And he ships the two little girls off to a friend while he looks for a new wife. And eventually he does find a woman who sizes him up and decides he's not good enough for her. Although she's been abandoned, she's an amazing liar. And finally, he just simply gives up, and she gives up as well after being rejected by a number of other people. Says, "Okay, well, yeah, we will marry." Every single horrific stepmother in Disney came together in this woman. There's her character. She could not have been worse.
Oh boy. So we have a teenage girl, Mary Shelley, growing up in this environment.
No. From about 3-4 years old.
Oh, I see. 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So
all right.
We're flashing forward to, though, when she is a teenager. And because she wrote the book at 19, there were some things that happened to her just in several years prior that I'm sure, based on what we're going to talk about a little bit later in the program, had an effect on the novel and some of the action within the novel.
Absolutely.
Mary, what was her dad's name? Was it Godwin?
Godwin.
So we maybe call her Mary Godwin, but
yes, at this
the time. But she did not have an idyllic childhood, apparently not only having a cruel stepmother.
There were other
issues going on.
Yeah, but let me leaven this not idyllic childhood. There's a great story that when she was very young, I think it's 9 years old, she was hiding underneath the couch when Coleridge comes over at one of these parties to read The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. She is discovered because her stepsister gives them up. She's about to face the wrath of the stepmother when Coleridge comes up and says, "Wait, if she is that thirsty for knowledge, let her stay." And she sat through The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, absolutely absorbing this. She's not even 10 yet.
Wow.
So there are wonderful things happening or in her home. There are horrible things happening, and they are equal in effect and size.
I'd like to remind everyone that this is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we're joined by Mark Arnold, Assistant Professor Communication and Journalism at Cal Poly, but also
former
a author of a new novel, Monster, the Story of Young Mary Shelley. Some of the critics I have read about Mary Shelley's life and this and the novel, which the original title was of the Frankenstein novel, was, remind us?
Oh, The Modern Prometheus.
Modern Prometheus. Of course, the legendary or mythological figure who brought fire and knowledge to man and was punished forevermore after the fact. There were some elements of Mary's life that were turbulent, were stressful, and probably wound up with from the time she became sexually active, a variety of things that were not pleasant, or maybe shouldn't even have been tolerated in that era, but they led to the writing of the novel. Could we at least touch on some of those issues?
Sure. Let's see. Mary is sent away to Scotland when she is 13, 14, to study with a Baxter. The family's name is Baxter. He's a natural philosopher, which means he's interested in things related to nature, everything from geology to medicine. Some of the things that he must have learned there, and one of the scenes in the book, she and the Baxter sisters are sent off into the woods to go catch frogs. When they come back, they dissect the frogs. And this is a time when an Italian scientist by the name of Galvani is experimenting with electricity. And they take the frogs and they put the probes on the frog's legs and the frog twitches.
Right.
Did that come out in Frankenstein? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, the galvanic response.
There it goes. Back. Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Even a frog that has passed.
Yes.
With the as long as the muscle tissue isn't too deteriorated,
sure,
it will still respond to the electric.
And think of the science fiction aspect of this.
Right.
She's predicting the defibrillator.
Wow. Jeez, that takes your breath away.
And she's a teenager.
What happened to her as a young woman, though, that I'm trying to get at this, I mean, there's some pretty horrific things, sexual dalliances, incest.
Oh, you want to go into sex stuff?
Well, at least I think we should at least briefly dip into
Let's
that.
Let's do the sex stuff. Let's do the sex stuff.
Because.
Come on. Let's go for it.
Program for all ages.
Okay. So Mary's in this household that has stars coming on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, for a couple of years, she lived with Aaron Burr in the household. But she comes in, she sits down for dinner, she looks up, and there's Percy Shelley on the other side of the table. I'm trying to think of something that your viewer or your listeners would relate to. It'd be like coming in, sitting down, and finding Ed Sheeran on the other side of the table. This is the rock star's rock star. And she looks at him and very intelligently says, "Who?" He notices her, she notices him. Oh, but she has to go back to Scotland to finish her education. When she returns from Scotland, Percy has definitely noticed her. She's now a little bit older, and she is blossoming. Mary escapes the house. It's absolutely terrible in the house. And she goes to the graveyard where her mother is buried. She lies on her mother's grave. She shuts her eyes. And Percy Shelley appears next to her, kneels down, and recites a poem. He's absolutely infatuated with her. Therein begins a courtship on her mother's grave.
Wow. I know I've used that word several times already.
I'm not kidding.
Young love.
The number of times.
Or something like that.
All right. Journalists have a saying. And the saying is, you can't make this crap up.
Right.
And that was what I must have said 100 times while I was working on this book. No. We got to keep going.
Yeah, go.
She says to Percy, "I hate my life. I have to get out of here." Percy says, "Fine, I'll meet you at 2 o'clock in the morning and we'll run away to Europe." Napoleon has been defeated. We now have the opportunity to travel through France. You want to go? And what kind of 15-year-old girl wouldn't say you want to go? I'll tell you what kind of 15-year-old girl didn't say she didn't want to go. Mary's sister. In the middle of the night, the door opens, and Mary's sister is standing there with her suitcase saying, I'm going with you. And Mary's thinking, let's see, an elopement with this handsome young man, and my sister's coming along? Excuse me?
Yeah.
But as things turned out, away they went. And while walking through France together as a threesome, discussing such things as Shakespeare, Percy, I think, has some folio pages of Byron, Lord Byron's, that he's editing and working on. They stop in an afternoon in a lovely glade, and there's a cool pool. Mary falls asleep in the shade. She wakes up. Percy comes to her and says, why don't you go ahead? Your sister's having a little stomach trouble. I'll meet you on the road in a little bit. And about an hour later down the road, the two of them catch up to Mary. And Mary says, what took you so long? And Percy looks kind of up at the sky and down at his toes and over the side. And the sister finally says, oh, what is poor Cordelia to do? Love in the shadows? And now the couple becomes a threesome. He's 21. The two girls have now turned 16.
Now, you see, I haven't read the novel, as I must confess to our audience. And so, I think we need to move to some of the themes in the book that maybe come from this. And what I have read, by way of some critical ideas, is, well, on the pseudo-negative side, she was just a woman or just a youth, or, you know, didn't write a real novel, or it was a derivative art that she had, not original art. Even though it was, as we are talking, the first science fiction novel ever published by a young woman in this case. There was a theme within her novel, A Modern Prometheus, of rebellion against the established order, but also a very strong love of humanity and how those two clashed. And in particular, perhaps it was birth issues or some of the tragedy around childbirth. Have you thought of that theory, or is that you know, apparently Mary had several children before she was in her 20s, and most of them died at childbirth. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is. But as far as birth issues go, the key scene at the beginning of Frankenstein is when the electricity is applied to the creature. The creature comes alive. Famously, it's alive.
Yes.
And he pulls the sheet off of the creature that's covering the creature, and he sees that the creature has undergone a terrible transformation. The lips are straight and black. The skin has tightened to the point that it's hideous. It's turned a jaundiced yellow type of color. And the scientist rejects the creature. This is the creature that, in the words of the scientist, will love him forever. He will be the perfect being. So we're talking about a father-child situation. And that comes out very clearly throughout Frankenstein.
May I intuit that it is the father rejecting the child?
Yes.
Almost at birth?
Yes. Much the way Mary was rejected by her father. Because when she came back from France, she sits down at the table and she looks at her father and her family and swallows hard and says, Father, I am with child. And the father gets up, walks to the door, and says, you belong to Percy Shelley now. I'll have no more of you. So he rejects her.
Wow. You know, in the remaining minutes we have, I would like to take your expertise, take the lessons of this novel into what lessons or takeaways does it have for the modern reader, for, say, the modern woman making her way, especially in these horrific times of sexual abuse and assault being in the news almost every day. Yep. What would Mary Shelley say, or what lessons would she have for us via her art today?
It's what she does say at the time. Percy is not any sort of one-man woman or one-woman's man. He plays around. And finally, at one point, he is putting the moves on his editor, Lee Hunt. Her name was Marianne Hunt. And they seem to be getting along very well until the sister of Marianne Hunt attempts to commit suicide because of this playing around that's going on. And Mary runs away, and Percy chases after her. And she says, "What rights do women have? How can a woman take care of herself these days? We are slaves to men." And that changed the rest of her life. She becomes quite an ardent feminist and a person who is supporting women's rights.
So not to be too dark, but that conversation and those activities happened about 200 years ago, and here we are.
Yes.
200 years later.
Yep.
And I guess we've learned a few things, or at least some people have. But
I think we've learned a great deal. If you take a look at the society, the way I cast society in the book, you'll see that there are similarities to today. But you can see that we've come a long way, too. Progress is made inch by inch, not suddenly 100 miles at a time.
So would you venture to say that ultimately the life of Mary Shelley, the message of the novel, is inspires some hope?
Oh, absolutely. The key word is persistence. She never gives up on her vision of herself. Her determination came through. And the result is a book that's 200 years old that has never been out of print. She did all right.
Wow. We'd like to remind everyone that this has been Brian Reynolds, a volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library, for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we are joined by a former Cal Poly professor and local author, Mark Arnold, discussing his new novel, Monster, the Story of the Young Mary Shelley. Thank you so much, Mark.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.